up, everybody? Welcome back to the Sorry to Interrupt podcast. Tom, we are back. We're going to recap Full Swing, episode 3. We were planning on the trifecta, but Will's a busy boy tonight, so it's just the two of us back at it again.
Will be missed, but we'll be hearing from him plenty on Friday twice. Are you guys recording on Friday? I haven't checked the calendar.
Nah, we'll be doing Saturday morning.
Okay. So you guys will hear him Friday with me and then Saturday with you.
Yeah, everybody, we'll be just fine. But we do have to recap a busy episode 3, and it was the Joel Damon and Wyndham Clark show, man. What were your biggest takeaways from this episode?
Number one for me, the biggest outlier was, you know, all respect to Wyndham. You know, me talking out of my ass like every fucking reporter, podcaster, everything does, says, oh, it was the equipment change and whatnot. It was a hell of a lot more than that. Overcoming the mental game, which is definitely something that I have been working on, probably even more than my physical game for a long time. And that's what's cool about golf is it's relatable because we're playing on the same courses sometimes with the same club, same ball as these guys. So I know how frustrating it can get at times, and obviously he does it at a much higher level. But that was my biggest takeaway was, you know, I was undereducated, and I'm glad I did get myself educated on you know, I'm just out here saying it was the clubs. It was clearly a hell of a lot more.
I think that this show has done a very good job in its 2 seasons. Obviously, we're only 3 episodes into the second, of highlighting the intricacies of what these players deal with from a mental side. And we know how frustrating it is because, like you said, it's the only game that's relatable where you can have Scottie Scheffler play and then you can go out and literally play the exact same sport.
For $600, you could play that course if you want.
Well, I said sport, so yeah. It's super relatable and it's super frustrating. You play against yourself, but when the stakes are this high and you've already accrued a good living, but your tour card is not 1,000% secured, you're living and dying with every tournament. And you see the human element with Wyndham talking about the passing of his mother and how that affected him. You saw him break down, you know, discussing.
Similar situation for Joel, too. They both lost their moms about the same time in life.
I'm glad that you just said that because that was I was about to segue into. I really like how they paired these two guys together in the same episode because obviously Joel was a star in season 1 and we got a little bit more of his backstory, but we didn't get – he kind of became famous simultaneously with also playing the worst golf of his life. Here with Wyndham, you see this guy who was expecting to just go out and dominate once he got onto the tour, play the same way he did in college, and it wasn't the case. And you can see – that it's become very paramount in sports, and golf is probably, I would say, right up there with baseball in terms of you can have it and lose it so fucking fast, and you got to play those mind games where you don't know if you're ever going to get it back, right? We see it with hitters who just lose it, and you see it with pitchers who all of a sudden just, they lose 2 or 3 miles per hour on their fastball, and they're just done. And you look at these guys who are not the elder statesmen on the tour, living and dying with every tournament and trying to get better and seeking the help, obviously, Wyndham seeking it last year. So I thought it was great that Netflix put those two together in the same episode.
Definitely was. Again, I have a gripe with the timeline, but I can't really bitch about that because they have to put an entire season together. So I do understand that. But now Joel Damon is current time, and he said it on NLU's podcast after the players on Sunday that he's playing some of the best golf of his life now, and it's coming out, and he was playing some of the worst golf. But, you know, touching little scene with him and his caddy Gino as well. You could tell that they're truly best friends because I think there's maybe three, maybe four guys on planet Earth that I would have that kind of heart-to-heart with. You might enter that category.
That's nice.
And there's a few more, but, like, you got to be real close to a guy to have that kind of moment with him. Just speaking, you know, the guy's talking here.
Yeah, for sure. Listen, it's become a very vulnerable situation for men and mental health, right? Whether it be in sports or outside of sports, where it's finally – we've crossed the threshold where it's not only accepted but very much welcomed and appreciated when grown men open up about their feelings, their traumas, about what they've experienced in the past and what they're currently going through. and growing as individuals and trying to wear a bunch of different hats. You hear Damon talking about, I'm trying to be a great father. I'm trying to be a great husband, but none of this matters. This house goes away if I don't win. I'm trying to be a great friend, but he mentioned his past experiences after his mother passed of not having a great relationship with a therapist and feeling like the therapist was just telling him what to do and it wasn't relatable. And I can only imagine that's a very negative experience in formative years. He's going to look at receiving any kind of external help that way. But when he's essentially hitting rock bottom at the same professionally, at the same time his fame is rising meteorically, it's got to be a real conflict. And you can really see he was breaking. And to have a best friend like that to put you in your place and say, I'm going to quit on you if you don't do this, that was really a cool moment.
It was. And you know, I forget just because I've known about Joel for a couple of years because he's been on NLU. I've seen his story about him and his mom, but it was nice to put it in perspective how much more famous he got, even though it's a very odd situation because, like he said, he's not the best golfer, but he's the most famous golfer at his skill level by far. And listen, I can totally understand the bad therapy thing. I went through something similar in my life where it's like, fuck this, I'm never doing this again. But you kind of just got to look at it like, you know, if you have a bad coach that's teaching you, if you and a coach don't vibe or you and a teacher don't vibe with anything, like, you just got to find the right teacher for you. It's the same thing as everything else. I'm glad he realized it, and he announced that he is seeing a sports something recently, so I'm happy he's figuring it out, and clearly it's working. And obviously I think he mentioned in the show that he spoke to Wyndham about it, and you know, after Wyndham goes out and wins that U.S. Open, I think that was all he needed to see.
Yeah, he was talking to Wyndham's caddy actually about the whole situation and getting the recommendation obviously from his caddy. But I think overall it's a touching moment. It's a good story to highlight because when we look at these players, we look at them on the leaderboard, we gravitate to the players with the really extroverted personalities, we gravitate to the stone cold killers who are just beasts on the tour, but we're not riding the emotional roller coaster unless we get super attached. And the only way you can get super attached is to really be led in the light of these guys' lives, right?
So yeah, I mean, really, that, there's only two ways.
Right.
It's either that or you're Scotty and you're just like Tiger-esque and you're just incredible to where everybody falls in love with you. It's either that or you show some personality.
Well, from the athlete side, right, if you played sports competitively or you love sports, you have an appreciation for the silent assassins who are just so dominant, the Bradys, the Jeters, the Tigers, the Kobes. You know, that's what you kind of go for. But if you're not necessarily only invested in that aspect of sport, you, in a singular sport, you're going to latch on to players and people that you just like their personalities, whether you hear them in press conferences or you see the way they interact on their field or course or court, whatever. And you're really getting that with Joel. And you saw after season one and the fame that him and his wife got, it becomes a story that, yeah, you're getting a lot of fans, but those fans aren't riding the roller coaster with you. They just want to see you show up to these tournaments. They hope you win, but they're not going home and shedding tears for you, most likely. But his career is on the line. His life earnings are on the line. So you got to really do everything that you can, exhaust all options to seek the help and treatment that you need when you're just going through. Like, dude, how unfun could that be? Just going out every tournament knowing you suck and it just being joyless.
Well, it's also the push and pull of like, and I'm not a dad yet, but it's like you feel like you're doing the right thing and you're justifying it to yourself because you're like, I'm spending time with my brand new family, like I'm doing the right thing. But it's like it's such a weird push and pull because it's like you are, but also you're not, because you got to provide for these fucking people and give them the lifestyle that you've given them as well.
For sure. And I think, not to go too deep into it, but listen, this is what the episode was about, so we're just analyzing it. The drinking component, too. And
yeah,
even though he was a very responsible father and you saw how much of a effort he was making every time he came home to be there for his new son and, you know, holding him and having those formative moments with him, obviously him being a great husband, too, but a lot of drinking, a lot of partying, a lot of that. And I know that's part of your persona, but that doesn't enhance your sports performance at all, particularly when you're kind of burning the candle at both ends.
Yeah, no doubt. And it was really cool to see both Wyndham and Joel open up. I mean, all of these guys did. Ricky did in the episode for him and whatnot, but they really went deep on this one. And I would assume that Joel probably could nix that if he wanted to, but it was also cool to see Netflix kind of just telling the story there as well, because we wouldn't have had any context had they not shown it, and clearly that was part of his life the last couple.
Yeah, and that's it shows that there's always something deeper, right? It's not just, oh, you're tired from, he's trying to work on every facet of his life. And when your career and the thing that's allowing you to have the life that you're trying to cultivate and be the role model you're trying to be and be the husband you're trying to be is not there, you're looking at your life and being like, shit, I could lose everything. And what does that amount to when I'm staying up and I'm boozing and I'm going to all these events because I'm popular now? Your fame is going to come more so. Like, if you think people love you now, look what's going to happen if you ever theoretically won a major or won a players or had anything, even a top two or three. It would be amazing.
Yeah, it'd be amazing. You can see the overwhelmedness in him as well, but he seems to have channeled that and cooled it off. He seems like a really awesome guy, a genuine guy, the both of them. And I left being equally as big of a fan as Damon as I ever was. I know you and Will are huge fans as well, and I'm a much bigger fan of Wyndham Clark now.
Yeah, Wyndham's story is very compelling, and you see that he was battling demons too as far as having the temperament on the
court. I still wanted to pull him to the side, and if I was in that interview with him and his caddy, I'd be like, all right, mental health stuff's cool. Can we talk about the putting?
Well, you know this is a drama show, Tom, and they're going for the drama over really the hardcore nerd golf stuff. But you're right, and the changes he made obviously were parallel to his success. But yeah, and again, too, is I think the biggest sign there was when he was struggling at the U.S. Open on that final round, hit a couple awful shots, and you're like, okay, I'm going to revert back to what I was, and it's only positive thoughts. We're just going to move on shot by shot. And I kind of forgot because we're almost a year removed from it. Yeah, he almost pissed that away on Sunday.
Oh, yeah, I forgot too. Yeah, no, watching that show, I was like, holy shit, I forgot he dumped it in that bunker and you know, basically just duffed it in there after on the first shot. And then, what was it, caught up in an even worse situation and he hit it to the other side of the green. That was very interesting. And also, it's like, it's such a fine balance that he's playing to where it's like, well, if I don't get angry, you know, to a certain extent, do I not care as much? And it's such a mental pretzel to be in.
Well, the psyche, the human psyche is so fragile. And when you're competing at the highest level,
not to mention when you're competing in a sport where you have sometimes multiple minutes in between shots to think about that mistake that you just made. Trust me, I know.
Yeah, I know you do. Well, that's why I compare it so much to baseball, man. I mean, it really is.
It's like you're a DH, honestly, sometimes. Yeah, because it's like you just got to go sit on the bench and think about it for a little bit until the next time you go up there. And it takes a certain, you know, some guys in baseball, too, are not cut out to be that player.
Well, that it's a sport where if you succeed 3 out of every 10 times, you're considered amazing.
Yeah, right. golf's even more than that. If you win and get a couple of top 25s, you know, and you're a mule, that's a great season.
Exactly. So I think there's parallels there, but from just the fragility of the psyche, you have your ebbs and flows. You're going to have your tournaments where you play great. Every week we talk about the leaderboard of the previous weekend's tournament. We make our picks. There are certain guys that I always hope to see up there. I know you're the same. We make fun of Patrick Cantlay. We make fun of some other guys. But you definitely see how badly these players genuinely want to win. And sometimes there is just that mental aspect where the physical game is there. Maybe you're winning, and all of a sudden the second creeps into your mind of, holy shit, I'm going to do this. And you tighten up and you become robotic. And Wyndham at LACC, after a moment where he easily should have fallen apart, he saved bogey. And from there, he went in and did everything else he needed to do to get that win. Even that putt that he made before the game, before the tournament winner, it was a putt where he just was like, I need to just get it nice and cozy right here. I don't have to do anything crazy.
Hit it to hole high. It was perfect.
Yep. Maybe in previous tournaments, I would try to sink that and I'd overshoot it. He laid it up exactly where he had to and drilled the winner.
Yeah, man. This might be recency bias, but I think this is one of my favorite episodes so far, if not my favorite.
Pulled on the heartstrings for sure, right?
It definitely did. Who do we have next week? I forgot about the preview. I think I axed out of it before it happened.
I did the same, so I'm no help to answer that question.
Well, damn.
Be surprised.
Hey, listen, I'm ready for the surprise. I'm ready for the surprise of Curb. Those are the only two shows really keeping me afloat. I started watching Band of Brothers on HBO. I don't know if you've seen it. Probably not, knowing you.
I've seen parts of it.
It's only like six. It's a six series show, so I've been enjoying it so far. A couple of good actors in it. I really do need you to watch The Wire or Breaking Bad. I had a Sopranos quote in our group chat today that I don't know if you and Will understood.
No, of course I understood it. I just didn't reply, but I got you.
Well, listen.
Your Uncle Junior quote. I got it.
Yes, thank you for that. Thank you. At least you've seen that. I'm concerned Will hasn't.
Yeah, I have seen that. It's been a really long time since I think I watched the whole series in like 2013.
Well, we got to see. We got a couple things we got to watch coming up anyways, but now it's all college basketball.
Yeah, the sports calendar right now is it's not lending for any shows. But listen, I'm always transparent with you.
Movies, of course.
Shows, some of the best ones. I'm not going to try to lie to you and say I know what I'll get references because obviously some of these are super iconic, but if you're looking for quotes or you're looking for exact scenes, I ain't.
Only Seinfeld and Curb.
Yeah, well, that's...
That Gardner-Webb game was really fun. I appreciated the fact that the other team, what was it, McMurray or whatever? McNee State? They were chucking up threes and whatnot, and Gardner-Webb...
McNee State is already in. It was somebody else.
Well, whoever it was... They were chucking up, I can get it right now, Grambling State and Montana State.
There you go.
Grambling State, they just played the opposite type of game, and Grambling State just kept going in the paint, kept grinding them down, even if Montana was banging threes on them coming back, and they eked it out. I appreciated the fact that they stuck to the game plan and stayed disciplined.
By the way, Virginia.
Oh, please. Fuck you. Fuck you is just, there. That's it. Fuck you.
There's nothing else to say.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, I saw all the tweets and I knew they were coming. St. John's, Indiana State. It's like, at this point, I'm just a broken man. I'm over it.
Yeah, I would be too. I wouldn't even know how to answer that. It would just be like, yeah, we all knew. We all fucking knew.
Yeah, we're moving on. Just absolute perfect vindication for basically what felt like the entire country except for Virginia, as Will would say.
14 points at the half. You've got to be shitting me.
Mm-hmm. I mean, at that point, it's like Tony Bennett's got to be like, guys, I know this is how we usually play, but we're going to try something a little different. It's called shooting.
They can't shoot. They're like 196th in offense.
Well, you know, I mean, the more shots you put up, the better of a chance you have of some of them going in. Maybe if they didn't fucking choke the clock out until the last second, they might have a better chance.
You miss 100% of the shots you don't take. Unless you're Virginia, you might be better off not taking them.
You might be better off not showing up. They should have said thanks, but no thanks. Thanks for the consideration.
Yeah, man. It was a rough watch, but the real fun starts tomorrow. I like this recap of Full Swing, and I like watching one episode at a time because I'm really able to consume and digest all of it as opposed to watching two where. Last year, I was like, did that blend into the next, or am I getting these two mixed up? So it's been good.
It has. I like that. I also like the fact that sometimes, you know, I can watch something twice if I feel like it was important. You know, I could go back the next day and whatnot. I haven't done that yet, but it's nice to have the option.
The option is there for you, pal.
It is. All right, man. Well, this was a lot of fun. We're going to be back. I'm going to be back on Friday with William. As long as everything goes according to plan, and then you're back on Saturday.
Damn straight. Everybody, you're going to be hearing us a lot, so lock it in.
Yeah, follow us on Twitter at Sorry Sports. Follow me and Will. Just check Sorry Sports' retweets. We're in there. And listen, enjoy the first real day of the tournament.
Absolutely. Take care, everybody.